this stage my pleasure to introduce to you comrade, His Excellency Pedro Monzon, the Cuban ambassador in Australia.
What a combination, welcome. Comrade and excellency. Nothing to do. I prefer to be a comrade. Well, thanks a lot, Robert. Thanks a lot, friends. I'm going to do something like our friend from East Timor. I'm going to read slowly, like pills, in order to give my personal experience. I mean, experiences. Like we used to say vivencias in Spanish. It's a different angle, a different point of view. I'm very happy he's here because I was the first ambassador to East Timor, and we began the cooperation, medical cooperation, and also in the field of education, etc., etc. And I really praise. I'm very happy and very, passionate for East Timor, and I follow every day what happened over there. It's a nice country, nice people. Well, as I told you before, this is not an academic talk, not systematic. Instead, I will try to present personal experiences that can give colors to this exceptional opportunity we had in Cuba at the beginning of the 60s. Being only 13 years old, I went to the literacy campaign in January 1961 and stayed till the end in December that year. 100,000 of young girls and boys were enrolled. I was included among them, and also the girl that 6 years after became my first wife. She was then only 11 years old. What was 6 years after? Not she was 11. I make it clear. The campaign was a very important step of the revolution for two fundamental reasons. First, the country with almost between 20 or 30% of illiterates needed the campaign badly for human, social, and economic reasons. And this was one of the several revolutionary changes that were included in the scope of the revolution from the very beginning of the struggle. Second, an important part of our generation, essentially in Havana, had a syndrome, the anxiety or a kind of guilt for having lost the opportunity to fight in the mountains with the legendary rebels. To understand this, we need to know the huge and general euphoria of the Cuban people that emerged with the triumph of the revolution after many years of injustices and repression, and the impact on us of the image of bearded rebels coming down from Sierra Maestra, I mean the range of Sierra Maestra, Sierra Cristal, and Escambray, and many other parts of Cuba in jeeps, trunks, and tanks. Numerous of them completely beardless because of their youth that instead used to let their hair very long. That was the only option, or beard or hair. Even Raul Castro had no beard. He was very young, but I know he it's a question of genes. And then he used to have the hair very long and used to have, como tu dices, Raul?
A ponytail.
The campaign was then an opportunity given to us by the leader of the revolution. By the way, I have to say that this pattern of behavior of the Cuban revolution has been repeated once and again during these 50 years. Many opportunities appear for the Cubans, a new generation. The fight against the invaders in Bay of Pigs, the fight in the mountains of Sierra del Escambray, range of Escambray, against mercenaries and bandits introduced by CIA, the work in the mountains to help the peasant harvest the coffee, the cutting of sugar cane, and many other voluntary works promoted, especially by Che Guevara, the international military help to many countries like Angola and several others, the educational campaign in many countries in Latin America in the early years, and now the support of the program Joseph Well, Yes I Can, the sustained help to many countries in the field of health that is also benefiting this region in the Pacific. This has been a way to continuously renovate our spirit and commitment with the opportunity of doing something to help our fatherland and poor countries in the world. Fidel's ideas and principles, nourished by José Martí's thought and actions, play the fundamental role in all of this. There is no doubt. Then, this was the meaning of the literacy campaign to us, and the motivation was such that youngsters like us used to live in the comfort of the cities decided to live and teach in very difficult conditions in our very poor countryside, and our parents let or even support us to participate. The commitment and confidence of the parents was such that many of the brigadistas, I mean the teachers like us, were very young girls. Let them go this way was a very difficult decision for our parents in that stage, a country with a lot of Catholic influences, and then in the cities, 11 years old girl, leaving them to go to the mountains to teach and write. You know, that was the influence of the revolution, very especially, we have to say, of Fidel Castro. We were kids, simply kids. The beginning was first, yes, we have a lot of time. The beginning was first, the school classes were suspended for a year. That was a very revolutionary idea. Simply, the school are suspended. Then you can go. If you want to go, you can go. That's very important and could be very fast. And of course, everybody in the school know how to read and write. Then the beginning was first, the school classes were suspended for a year. And the majority of the brigadistas, Conrado Benitez, I was one of them, went to Villagrama, a place in Varadero, a beautiful beach, to learn how to use the manuals, we used to call them cartillas, received general instruction and the uniform, the lamp, a Chinese lamp, and some other utensils, and also learned our anthem or hymn named Somos la Brigada Conrado Benitez. That's beautiful, beautiful. Then I went first to Sierra Maestra, to a peasant house that used to cultivate tobacco. There I stayed around 4 months, and afterwards I accepted to go to the province of Camagüey to teach how to read and write to the militiamen that had been fighting against several groups of mercenaries infiltrated also with the help of CIA. I have very good memories of both periods, that is to say Sierra Maestra and Camagüey, but also bad memories. I have to confess that it was hard to stand for us, for so young kids. All the envelopes of our letters sent to our families were written outside with slogans of the revolution, like Patria o muerte venceremos, Fatherland of Death, we will win, or Aquí nadie se raja, here nobody will desist or crack, and many others. There were declarations of commitment with the revolution, but also a way of convincing ourselves that we will and must stay till the end, despite difficulties. It was a trial for us, a proof, you know, strong. Because, for instance, we miss badly our families. We experience the difficulties of taking a bath from buckets of water brought from rather a distant river, the darkness of a countryside with no electric lights, or the bad feeling of constant bites of mosquitoes in the militia camps in Camagüey. But all of this changed completely our behavior. In the city, many of us were spoiled children and very fussy in every field of life. When we returned from the campaign, we felt proud of ourselves. Our character was forged. We learned the meaning of how work in the countryside, since during the day we work in the crops with the peasants, how to live in any material condition, and we brought a clear sense of human solidarity. Immediately after returning home, we had another massive meeting with Fidel that declared Cuba free territory of illiteracy, like in Venezuela. And I remember that our repeated chant was then, Fidel, Fidel, tell us what else we have to do. Fidel, Fidel, dinos qué otra cosa tenemos que hacer. And we really meant it, despite the sufferings. Then the revolution offered us scholarship to study in Havana, and I think the majority of the brigadistas accepted them. That was the beginning of what we have now, that our most important resource is a human being. Our most important capital is a human being. Finally, my friends, I have to say that I'm grateful to the revolution for this opportunity, and that I won't ever forget that period in my life. Thanks a lot.
Now, back to questions and comments. We've got 10 minutes left. Bob Barton wanted to talk.
Oh, thanks, Robert. Yeah, I'm an academic at the University of New England. I've been working in Timor-Leste since 2004 with Entero and the other people on the literacy campaign there. To begin with, I would like to acknowledge the Minister of Education, Senora Rosaria Corte-Real, whose leadership of the Ministry of Education in the period, along with her Vice Minister, Hilda de Conceição, who was an ex-guerrilla fighter in the mountains, they were the leaders, the Timorese leaders of the campaign. And though she may be embarrassed by me mentioning it, Rosaria's daughter is here with us today as well. So the second thing I want to just take up is the point about the way the campaign is adjusted. The Cubans arrived in 2004 with materials from Brazil, because Portuguese was one of the official languages. But very quickly they learned that the majority of the people in the villages, except for the older people, were not able to speak Portuguese because the Indonesians had suppressed it because it was the language of the resistance. So they adopted a policy. First of all, they learned Tetum. Then they remade the entire program of 65 lessons on DVD. And the way they did it was they went back to Cuba, and the students who were the Timorese who were studying medicine in Cuba became the actors on the videos, on the DVDs. So the Cuban government paid for all this to make new DVDs, so that then they came back with the 65 lessons on DVD. And when I was there in the classes, when the television came on and the people saw for the first time these young Timorese learning to read and write in front of them, learning in their own language, and this was an extraordinary thing that they did. And the last thing I would say is that the thing that is most impressive is not even the method or the pedagogy, but the way the Cuban educators live so close to the ground in Timor-Leste. They ride in the microlets, they live in the villages, they shop in the markets, and so unlike a lot of the other international workers who are traveling in Toyotas and whatever around the countryside, it's a very close to the, and when we ask the people what is the most important thing about the campaign, they often say it is that the Cubans are like us. That's what they say, the Cubans are like us, and that's why it is easy for them to learn from them. So that's just...
Thanks, Bob. It's Philomena
here. No, Philomena was not able to come.
Open to questions, discussion, comments. Lucila.
For me, this is an expression of the way and we are living, and why the youth is stuck and in drugs, and no hope, nothing. And I got from Peru some information that I just got about it. They expect to achieve in 2021 the metas.
Thanks, Lucila. Other comments or questions? I'll give myself the call briefly to ask any of the panelists who wish to comment on it, could they briefly say how the literacy program in their country is linked to production, to the organization of production?
Well, yes, that's the literacy campaign in Venezuela. It's, as I say before already, it's not only to teach and write, and that is also to incorporate one's people, because after Hugo Chavez, knowledge is opening, you know, and it's incorporation of everybody. And then is the baby having... those people also, once they get the first stage of learning and going to the primary school, doing that level of primary school, it's not only there are the mission that will complete to continue. There are people that will graduate from high school, and then there is the mission to graduate people in universities. And those people have been incorporated in the workforce, in the production of the country, you know. There are that linked mission, which is the Vuelvan Caras, and which is just to put in production what they have learned, which are all different kind of subjects. The Venezuelan develop now in the agriculture level and at the academic level, and where we do even have a satellite in the skies there. So this is the proud thing for a country that has a big number of illiteracy people, you know, so that's
thanks very much.
So yeah, that's very recent, just in a few sentences. Before 1959, between the literacy campaign, a country totally monoproducer, at present we are a country we can also export our human resources, as our ambassador says. So I mean, Fidel and Che says that the future should be a future of men of sciences. It was the only way to achieve that main future, men of sciences. So those small peasants who, I mean, learn how to read and write in 1961 are the ones which are really ruling the Cuban economy at present. So plenty of examples. But among one of the most important things, if you don't mind. So the way we found the role of women in the Cuban society after that literacy campaign. Because even before that, women were only neglected to prostitution, to do the housework and everything. And that literacy campaign made them find a role within society. Not only production in terms of producing goods, but also production in terms of producing welfare. Values for the human peoples, as I said before.
In Timor, the experience of the resistance bases, school and production was interrelated. That's how we, even inside the army lines, for 2.5 years, we had a lot of foods. But today people are trying to buy food to feed the country because, thank you.
Hola. Perhaps one more 1 minute exchange. We need to be out in about 4. All right. It's Nelson Cabrera.
Yeah. I believe this is again for some subject. How do they, because this program is obligated not only in Cuba, especially in the beginning, but now in Venezuela, I think Paraguay, I think in Uruguay too, and in other places, how they interact with the educators in their country itself, because the brigadas, they go where they are, I mean, young people, and how they work with, let's say, in Timor, with people from Timor, this is in Timor itself.
So you better, I guess the best
one. My experience in Timor, our program is the physiology of the program. The anatomy, I mean, the content is put by every country. That's the reason,
exactly.
You know, Venezuela do whatever they think they have to do regarding the culture of Venezuela and also Timor and the language they use. Then what we do is to guide, to give the pattern, and then we use in every country, I mean, as helpers, they are called facilitadores. Person that facilitate the work, you know, and they used to be distributed in the whole country. They are prepared with the Josip Boedo program. And then they start, you know, like Venezuela has been doing and Bolivia and many other countries in the world. What we do is our experience has been transformed in a system, a pattern of behavior, and then we use our people in order to advise in different countries, using, of course, the local people. And the content of the books, cartillas or manuals, is placed by the country. Because, you know, this has nothing to do with the brainwash. Because normally whenever Cuba appears, they say it's a brainwash, nothing to do, just the contrary. And it also happened with education in Cuba of Timorense or people from other countries. They simply cultivate their own culture, we respect it, and there's no brainwashing at all. Nothing to do with that. These are the principles, essentially.
Yes, exactly what I said before. I mean, the main advantage of their program, and it is not a commercial to their program, is that we can take into consideration also the idiosyncrasy of the people. We respect their custom, they repel their culture, and we only give you their tools. And they are, I mean, can self-learn, I would say. As also to point out, friend, it is not only for third world countries. Also, at this very moment, in Spain, in Sevilla, that province has been applied as well.
In Sevilla,
incredible. In Spain. And there are people in different first world countries demanding to close that program.
In New Zealand.
50% of the people in New Zealand. I read yesterday 8 million.
Significantly higher 8 million. Than the government prepared to admit. All right, will this fit into 1 minute, ma'am?
Oh, sorry, just one question. Jan Broek, Is there any possibility or any way it's possible for us to get this Cuban literacy program into our indigenous communities?
In fact, there is. We are just also that process has been applied to Aboriginal people. That's the most important thing, friends. It was exactly the same experience we had in Cuba. Our patients at the beginning, some of them were really reluctant to learn. Really reluctant, due to the culture. And the way we apply it is just to get confident with them, to be involved with them. That you said before, someone said in here, the most important is that the Cubans are interacting with us. And that's the basis of that program, that we interact, that we do not set any boundaries between the students and the teachers, that we really interact with them. And that program especially applied not only to indigenous people, but also to handicapped people, disabled people. So that is the importance of that program. For sure you can get access to all those information concerning.
And it's free.
Exactly, free.
Because
free, why? You know why? Because, I mean, for us, education is not a business. It's a need of humanity.
Human right. To do this, I mean, the key is there should be a political will. If there is no political will, you won't ever succeed. Because this is not a commercial issue. The poor people are the people that cannot write and read, generally. Then should be political will. Cuba has the political will, but of course the country that want to go on with the idea should have also the political will.
All right. Look, I really am sorry to have to tie things up now. It seems as though we could have gone on for a little while, but I'm sure we can do so informally. A couple of quick announcements. Firstly, this is the week of the anniversary of the successful People's Revolution Phase 2 in Venezuela, when the attempted coup was defeated. And tonight at the Teachers' Federation in the city at 7:30 p.m, upstairs there'll be a forum called Venezuela, Celebrating People's Power and the Bolivarian Revolution. Tomorrow night, at the same venue at 7 p.m, Where is Cuba Headed? With Ezequiel Morales as the guest to discuss and debate that very theme. There are here a couple of books that Viviana and myself are prepared to donate to libraries via anybody here who is interested in the theme and thinks they have a library that will take this up. The first is actually a Cuban production. It's called Cultural Imperialism in Latin America. I edited it. I had the privilege of editing it. However, it's principally from the University of Matanzas, known historians and philosophers there. This is the second volume from the book Viviana is referring to. There are a couple of authors' copies here. This one is the second volume of the history of literacy and popular education in Chile. If anybody would like to take one of these, on the understanding that they give it to a public library within 3 months, they're welcome to do so. Please see me at the end. And finally, as I'm sure you'll understand, we are, in terms of organisation, more than you see today. I must thank a couple of other people, it would be remiss of me not to do so. Firstly, to Lucila Flores, our Chilean friend, who has been a wonderful inspiration behind this event. Lucila spoke a bit earlier, and I want to thank her on behalf of everybody involved. Secondly, the manager of research in this faculty, Patrick Brownlee, who has been a model of expedition and cooperativeness, and let it be so in the future between those of us who have deep links with the Latin American community and the university. Many thanks again, Patrick, and forgive me for not being here. Pedro Monson, who has been a terrific inspiration behind the scenes, to Ezequiel, of course, and to the panelists, and in particular to yourselves for making this a rich event. May it happen again. Many thank you.
Ezequiel Morales also is speaking on Monday at the Resistance Centre in 23 Abercrombie Street at 6:30. And also we're showing a special show of a question and answer with John Pilger on The War You Don't See, his film. And that will be the Teachers Federation on Tuesday night. But it explains why you don't hear anything good about Cuba or Venezuela.
Thanks, everyone.
Oh, yes, this is one of my...